Our third and final panelist this morning is Desmond Swain, Director of Advanced Level Studies and former Chairman of the Department of Economics of Recon College, Wellington, Shropshire, England. He teaches courses in contemporary United Kingdom economics, pure economics, and British economic history. Before his appointments at Recon, he taught economics at Charterhouse, another leading British public school. He also has worked as an accountant for Large and Winter, a British accountancy firm, and Tractor Limited, a data systems company. Mr. Swain has a master's degree from St. Andrews University in Scotland, which I know Russell Kirk will appreciate. During the last election, Mr. Swain was a campaign director for the Conservative Party candidate for Recon constituency, who was elected to Parliament. He acted in a similar capacity during the 1979 general election and the Scottish referendum campaigns. Active in party politics, Mr. Swain is a member of the Economic Committee of the Bow Group, a prominent British public policy institute affiliated with the Conservative Party, and the Monday Club, a Conservative Party advisory group. An interesting feature of Mr. Swain's personal history is that he spent part of his youth in Afghanistan, where his father was a British diplomat. Desmond Swain is on a lecture tour sponsored by the USIC Educational Foundation. Mr. Swain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the sake of brevity, I will only deal with one aspect of public scandal in Britain today, although I will be happy to field questions on any matter of public policy. The fact is that my brief is very much the same as that of my colleagues, the future that didn't work. Well, as Disraeli said about Britain, the future of this country depends upon the education of her people. It is a matter of remarkable irony that the socialists and libertarians of the left in Britain have taken up that dictum with a vengeance, whilst it has been regarded as a matter of supreme indifference by the Conservative Party. What is the state of secondary education in Britain? I listened with relish both this morning and last night. You have heard nothing yet. The fact is, the incredible statistic revealed by Sir Keith Joseph to the Bow Group on a Wednesday evening early last month in the House of Commons was that 50% of pupils now leaving secondary education in Britain had no recorded grade in any subject whatsoever. Now, by recorded grade, we do not mean a pass. We mean that there was simply no grade classifiable on the scale from A to U which could record their feature of their achievement. Now, that, for an enterprise which consumes 5.5% of the gross national product, which last year accounted for £11 billion of public funds, is a staggering rate of unproductivity. The fact is, to produce its product, the secondary educational system in Britain has 11 years at 5 days a week, at 5 hours a day, at 32 weeks a year. And yet it has managed to turn out a product that 50% are unclassifiable in any subject whatsoever. And we wonder why youth unemployment is so high in Britain. May I quote, to give you some flesh to put on the bones of that a staggering achievement. This is from a letter to the Financial Times, our equivalent of your Wall Street Journal. As managing director of an engineering company wishing to take on apprentices, I feel I must point out the experience of my personnel manager where school leavers are concerned. Since the summer, he has failed completely among many interviewed to find a single youngster with educational standards which might be considered suitable for the training available. The local training group has assisted in this task with similar results. To give some indication of why we turned down those who applied, none was able to answer the following. Express 1/4 as a decimal. How do you multiply by 10 using decimals? And having been shown the answer to question two, how do you divide by 10 using decimals? Well, the simple fact is that we are turning out people who are unemployable in any capacity. They could not find their way out of a paper bag. And of course, this is at a time when the requirements of the labour force in Britain will increasingly be for people who have a certain technical ability, who are able, or of a sufficient educational standard, to be re-educated at several times during their working life. Such is the pace of technological advance. Gone are the days of menial, labour-intensive work. Now, of course, the brief is that the future isn't working. The future that doesn't work, well, the future for these people will never work. It will never be working. The fact is that we have condemned those people to be pensioners of the state for their entire lives. And so a system of public education designed to be the means of improvement and betterment has become the engine of impoverishment for a large proportion of its supposed benefactors. Why has this sorry state of affairs arisen? A simple fact is, it is a question of ideological preference. In the 1960s, largely stemming from the 1944 Education Act, we had a system in Britain which divided according to academic ability. What happened was at the age of 11, on an extensive set of intelligence tests, children were divided between those that would go to grammar school, those who are educationally very bright and could be expected to go on to university, and those who were much dimmer or less bright, let us say, who would go to the secondary modern school and would be educated with a slightly more technical education to suit them for the sort of jobs that would be more suitable to their abilities. The ideologues in the 1960s decided to use the educational system in Britain as a means of social engineering to create an equal society. Now, even the most radical proponents of the comprehensive system, which was to combine these two separate schools and have mixed ability classes in one school to create an air of equality, even the most radical advocates of that system accepted that there would be some fall in standards. I don't for one moment they suspected that that fall would be as radical as it has been. But the simple fact is they accepted that there would be a fall. They simply made a choice, and their choice was that an equal society was more important than an academically excellent one. And of course the argument always was, but the intelligent child will get his education anyway, because by being assisted by his parents or by reading books in his own time or through his own natural interest for the subject, he would acquire his own education. It's been part of the tradition of English schoolmastering that the teacher knows nothing about what he is teaching, and very much in that tradition, the pupil would be expected to achieve his education for himself, so the intelligent wouldn't suffer. Well, that has been true to a very large extent, but it's been true of those pupils who come from bookish and intelligent homes, whose parents have academic aspirations, who are prepared to help them with their homework and encourage them. In other words, it has worked for those who are middle class. But, of course, for the children of the working classes, who for whom the grammar schools were a means of escape, a means of betterment, that system has been lost because they have no such encouragement. They don't have houses stocked with libraries and books. And, of course, the result has been that they have spent their time in the public educational sector in a sort of relaxed boredom, to emerge at the end unqualified, having not fulfilled their potential. Now, of course, here we have the perfect example of how a system designed to benefit a proportion of the population has worked explicitly against them, because the system has militated against the very social mixing it was designed to achieve. Because what we have done in Britain is made learning a middle-class phenomenon. Of course, the working classes, in spite of the explosion in tertiary education grants, now fill a smaller proportion of university places than they did 15 years ago. The system has worked against them in every way. And we have the classic example earlier this year of the Arden Comprehensive School in Solihull. Now, any comprehensive school, any public school, has its catchment area. And the Arden Comprehensive School in Solihull is situated in a very nice residential area with large owner-occupied houses as its catchment area. And of course, therefore, the parents in that area have been able to fill the school with their own children and no one else's. Now, the Solihull Educational Authority, noting the horrifying trends over the last 15 years, decided to abandon its comprehensive schools and go back to the old division between grammar school and secondary modern. Now, apart from the anticipated reaction from left-wing teachers' unions, the most vigorous resistance came from the parents of the middle-class area, because here you had a very wealthy area, therefore the clientele of the school was rather good. You had high academic standards and a high level of discipline. And of course, the last thing they wanted was there to be selection on grounds of academic ability, because then many of their children would have to give place to those from poorer homes, but slightly more academically orientated, brighter kids from the poorer parts of town. And of course, their own children would be displaced to find themselves in school with a less rarefied atmosphere. What essentially we had was a private, fee-paying school. Only the fees were being paid to the estate agents and to the building societies through the appreciation of house prices in that area. And so the designed social mixing that was to be brought about by the sacrifice of some educational standards has merely brought about an incredible fall in educational standards without the commensurate increase in equality it was designed to create. A lot was said, on a slightly different note, a different point, a lot was said, implied in what was said earlier and last night, that the public school system ought to provide a certain social cohesion, a certain ground floor of values and attitudes. Now, this is, of course, very interesting in the light of the failure of the amendment for prayer in public schools. Our tradition in Britain is very different. The 1944 Education Act requires that every state school begin its day with an act of public worship, Christian worship, and that each child be taught one period a week of religious instruction. But of course, the problem is, largely as a result of the libertarians, the left-wing libertarians in Britain, that this has become the most enormous Trojan horse. Because of course, in the name of pluralism and diversity, what has happened is that the religious education curriculum and the act of worship at the beginning of the day has been expanded to cover a whole wide area of aspects of human life, of different points of view and looking at morality and that kind of thing. Now, we all know the way that an enlightened elite ensures its own propagation, and that is by slanting the information that the teacher provides for the pupil. And that is essentially what has happened in many state schools in Britain. And might I quote to you an article written by one such teacher agitator employed by the Inner London Educational Authority to enlighten our youth. This publication, incidentally, is also entirely funded by the Inner London Educational Authority, of which this man is the editor. Children must be taught the righteousness of revolutionary violence against American imperialist tyranny. In any realistic campaign against nuclear weaponry, the peace movement has got to be able to counter the growing anti-Soviet slanders by the warmongers. It is incumbent upon our movement and upon internationalists everywhere to counter the rising anti-Soviet lies and slanders with the truth. Now, of course, the libertarians are right that in a free society, these views must be allowed to be expressed, but you must not expect the taxpayer to foot the bill for his own subversion. And that is the monstrosity that is now taking place in British state education. There are a myriad of other examples. For example, peace studies, black history, sex education. This is what they are teaching people instead of teaching them to learn to read and write. And of course, with respect to reading and writing, No longer are children taught from those wonderful primers, Jack and Jill and Johnny Goes to School. Let me quote from another Ilya sponsored body, the Hackney Letterbox Library, which largely produces texts for schools to teach young children to read and write. And I quote from their own pamphlet, the glossy publication encouraging the purchase by schools of such books, one picture book for reading aloud and learning to read. Jenny Lives with Eric and Martin, by Suzanne Posher, with photos by Andreas Hausen. The first English language book to explain a gay relationship to younger children. Well, whoopee, I can see us all rushing out to provide it for our children. But the simple fact is that this is being provided by the state. This is the state provision. And this is, of course, the danger, the subversion with our own government paying for these views to be expressed and our own children to be subverted. And so we see that the problem is not a totalitarian socialism in Britain. It is a libertarian one. Big Brother is not the iron fist clenched in anger. It is the open hand dishing out largesse, providing for this diversity of views. How can we complain when old ladies are mugged in the street and their money stolen from them? When children are taught at school that crime is a bourgeois concept? That is the state of public education in Britain. Now, there has been some talk that we need a public stake for this general ground floor of public morality and shared values, and we mustn't move to a voucher system, largely diversifying private education. Well, the simple fact is that private education in Britain, which accounts for 5% of the market, has remained much more consistent and not diverse at all, largely still advocating those standards that were propounded by Dr. Arnold at Rugby. The public school in Britain, by that we mean the independent school, is still largely very much the same institution with high academic standards designed to produce Christian gentlemen. And the reason why that is because the market ensures that where you have competition, parents get what they want. It's only where the state funds the system that you don't get what the parents want. You get what these lunatic fringe who happen to control the local education authorities, largely by their propensity to be able to sit up to 4 o'clock tonight at night to push it through a division when any normal person has gone to bed. But that, and the only way, therefore, to secure a radical improvement, which is desperately necessary in educational standards, is to set the rest of the market free, to allow those people who are trapped in state-provided education to escape through a voucher system. That would ensure the cohesion of society, because largely we all want the same thing. We're all as bourgeois as one another. After all, we all want a video recorder, and we don't want to have to share it with Vladimir next door. I thank you.